Hello, I'm Lina Armudo. Welcome to Health Chat. According to figures compiled by Johns Hopkins University, since the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 a global pandemic, the deadly virus has claimed the lives of over 6 million people, with at least 634 million confirmed cases worldwide. However, public health experts say there is hope on the horizon, with the World Health Organization announcing this month that there has been a 90% drop in global COVID-19 deaths since February. The drop in the number of deaths is attributed to a number of factors, but experts say, most importantly, it has to do with the number of people who have received the COVID-19 vaccine. Even though vaccine coverage in many African countries falls far behind the global target, some countries, including Zambia, which started its COVID-19 vaccine rollout in April 2021, have been able to achieve that goal. The Zambian government recently announced that it had reached the milestone by fully vaccinating 70% of its population. So how did Zambia do it in the face of vaccine shortages and disinformation about the vaccine? In an exclusive interview, my colleague Jackson Vunganyi spoke with Dr. Muka Chikuba. She is the country representative for the Public Health Organization, JSI, and chief of party for USAID Discover Health Program, who joined him from Lusaka.
So, Dr. Muka, life is seemingly returning to normal in many parts of Africa, including in Zambia. And so before we get to how you were able to increase the COVID-19 vaccination rates in the country, I wanted to ask, what was the impact of COVID on Zambia as compared to its neighbors in the region?
You know, the impact of COVID, especially during the early waves, was really, really significant. We had so many people who were infected at the beginning of the COVID pandemic. We had lockdowns. Our health system was failing to cope. We are a country with a health workforce that was at 46% during the early waves of COVID-19, the COVID-19 pandemic. And the health system was failing to cope because it was already overstretched by the time the COVID-19 pandemic hit. So we had so many health workers who were sick. And then because the health system was overstretched with so few health workers, the system was failing to cope with a number of clients and patients who were very critically ill with COVID-19. So not only was the health system failing to cope, people's livelihoods were affected. They were not able to go out to work and earn a living. We are a developing country with a lot of people living on the margin, and it was really, really difficult, both on the health system, on the household level, and on the economy. It was a really, really bad impact during the first waves. But like many other countries, once the vaccination program started and we started vaccinating our people, we began to see some relief from some of the severe impact at the beginning of the pandemic.
Now, Zambia's Ministry of Health recently achieved its goal of getting to up to 70% of the nation's eligible population fully vaccinated against COVID-19. How was it able to achieve this milestone?
So 1 year ago, in October 2021, when the president of Zambia, 2 months after he was elected into office, announced the target of fully vaccinating 70% of the eligible population, the coverage, fully vaccinated coverage, stood at 3.5%. To many of us, this target seemed unattainable. This was especially so given the very low vaccination uptake that was largely driven by highly prevalent myths and misconceptions about the safety and efficacy of COVID-19 vaccinations. So how did Zambia accomplish the turnaround? It took accepting with humility that we as health experts did not have all the answers in this case, and reaching out with respect to our communities and the Zambian people to obtain their input, acceptance and buy-in, and their participation in the vaccination effort. Firstly, we went to the Zambian people and got their input to design tailored COVID-19 messages that resonated with them to help change mindsets and behavior about COVID-19 vaccination. The key message that came up for us in Zambia was get vaccinated, protect Zambia, really speaking to the patriotism that we were trying to energize to get people vaccinated. But that message came from them. And that became our campaign slogan. We then went all out to share timely and accurate information with the people, including on one-on-one basis, to encourage them to get vaccinated for themselves and for their families. But we did so respecting personal choices. Some people just didn't want to be vaccinated, and we respected some of those personal choices and did not coerce anyone. Mm. Importantly, yeah. we were ready to administer the vaccine upon acceptance. Please go ahead.
Okay. So, and I just wanted to go back to a little bit to that. There was some pushback in many parts of the continent against the vaccines, including here in America, actually, mostly due to misinformation or disinformation. How were you able to counter that misinformation?
Because when we designed the messaging, Jackson, we did that by doing rapid human-centered design studies. We went to the Zambians and talked to them to find out what their issues were. And then we designed our messaging to address their issues. But we designed those messages in language that resonated with them. I can design a message sitting in my office here as a project director. If I take it to the market, a busy African market, and I start trying to encourage people using my message, they're not going to listen to me. So we went down to the people, Jackson, and used language that they understand and identify with, and designed our messaging around what resonated with them, but basing it on science. That's what we did.
Mm. Now, in your experience, how are people's willingness to get a COVID-19 vaccine influenced by the attitudes of other members of their household?
And this is one of the areas that is fascinating. You know, because we came from a really severe, the second wave for us and the third waves were brutal. People were dying. We didn't have oxygen in our hospitals. We had a shortage of oxygen. And people saw their family members die. So to some degree, people wanted to protect themselves. They wanted to protect their loved ones, and they wanted to protect the country. But they also wanted to see what the impact would be if others were vaccinated. Some of them waited for other family members to be vaccinated, and then they got convinced from the example of family members, not only family members. What we did was we recognized the importance of harnessing influence to get best results. We involved influential opinion leaders like traditional leaders, civic leaders, religious leaders, and other leaders like musicians, performance artists, to support our community health workers, who were really the key people who went into the communities. But influential opinion leaders supported our community health workers in rallying eligible populations to get vaccinated. For example, if a popular musician got vaccinated, masses followed suit and got vaccinated too. So it wasn't just at the family level with family members influencing each other, but also using influential opinion leaders to help us rally the masses around vaccination. So it was a multi-pronged approach that also harnessed influence apart from just a one-on-one within families.
Right, right. And before I let you go, Dr. Muka, there remains a large disparity in the share of people vaccinated against COVID-19 when you compare low-income and high-income countries. I read some reports that say that as of early this year, I know we're coming to the end of 2022, but as early of this year, over 80% of the population in developed countries were vaccinated, compared to say about 15% in low income countries. How do we close that gap?
So, you know, Jackson, that's a really good question. What we found out was that it's not vaccine hesitancy that is the biggest barrier to vaccination in some of the low-income countries. Zambia was at 3.5%. And when we found out what the barriers were, we tried to close those barriers. One of the biggest barriers was access. We increased access to vaccines by taking COVID-19 vaccination to where people are through outreach. A team of our trusted foot soldiers, the Zambian community health workers, and the vaccine providers seamlessly delivered clear information and vaccine access, often right to families' doorsteps, eliminating both the barriers of misinformation and the overwhelming cost of travel. Hundreds of thousands of trained community health workers, who are truly the heroes of this success in Zambia, fanned out to generate demand while accompanying vaccination teams, provided access to the vaccines in markets, in bus stops, in schools, in places of worship, in urban neighborhoods, and in rural villages. Over the past 1 year, they braved the heat. They waded through rivers to reach beneficiaries and helped to make sense of our high density unplanned settlements, where there are no street names and no house numbers, but they are of the community. They come from those communities. They know how to reach our people. We would have been lost without them. So we took the vaccines to where people are. Now, let me just mention, Jackson, that a vaccine program that doesn't wait for people to come to the health facility, that takes vaccine to where people are, is actually quite expensive, because you are fanning out, you're taking groups of workers, and you're taking vaccine to where people are. But if we wanted to turn the tide around, we needed to do this. So that's what we did. We took vaccines to where people are, because some people just are so unreached by the health system that it was too expensive for them to travel to our health facilities to get vaccinated.
Dr. Muka, for many across the continent, public health officials, they say that, you know, when COVID hit, it found health systems that were not able to respond to the task at hand. My question to you, based on some of the lessons you've learned in the last two years during this pandemic, 2.5 years during this pandemic, how do you strengthen these health systems in ways that we can cope with the next pandemic?
That's a very, very good question. We are actually facing that challenge in Zambia. Like I said, we are using the outreach model for taking vaccines to where people are. But when you do that, you are using healthcare workers who are responsible for delivering other essential services, childhood immunizations, HIV treatment, TB treatment, delivery services. So we already had a health system that was only 46% staffed. So if you took out those 46% of the establishment to do your outreach, you will collapse the rest of the health system. And that's what many countries are facing. We were lucky in Zambia. We had an opportunity that we capitalized on. We had a number of out-of-work healthcare workers who were not yet employed, and we went to the market and got some of those, to help us deliver vaccination services. Without the out-of-work healthcare workers, we would have found it very, very difficult to do COVID-19 vaccination and also deliver essential health services. We are also lucky in the sense that we've had a number of years of PEPFAR and USAID investment that led to strengthening of some of the health system components, including supply chain, laboratory services, and we could leverage those parts of the system to respond to COVID-19. But the biggest issue was just bodies to deliver the vaccine. And if we are going to be prepared to respond to the next public health emergency, I think countries have to start to staff up and make sure that they have the health workers to respond to public health emergencies. They have the lab system to manage any future pandemics, the supply chain system to deliver vaccines and other medical supplies where they are required. So I think many countries really have to look critically at all components of the health system and work to strengthen them. You know, the president said it best when he closed our event the other day, and he really appealed to the Zambian people and Zambia's supporters to channel the spirit they have shown in the COVID-19 vaccination effort and turn up in their spheres of operation and influence to be better prepared for the next emergency. Everyone recognizes that without strengthening health systems, this interconnected global village cannot respond effectively to public health emergencies.
That was my colleague Jackson Vunganyi speaking to Dr. Muka Chikuba, country representative for JSI in Zambia and chief of party for USAID Discover Health Program. You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It is time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. Malawi is struggling to contain one of the worst cholera outbreaks in years that has spread nationwide, killing more than 180 people and infected more than 6,000. Authorities and aid groups have stepped up cholera vaccination and hygiene campaigns, as Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre, Malawi.
Malawi and its authorities are struggling to keep a cholera outbreak that has spread to nearly all the country's 28 districts. Dora Mafurinwa is in charge of the Limbe Clinic in Blantyre.
The cholera situation as of currently, we are receiving a lot of cases every day. Yeah. So the numbers have spiked at the moment. We're getting about maybe 4 or 3 patients per day.
The situation is more critical in areas where residents use water from untreated sources like rivers, where bacteria can spread the diarrheal illness. Elida Peel is a resident of Blantyre's Chigumula Township. She says, we used to have tap water in my area, but all the taps were vandalized, and also it's very hard to access water from boreholes because most of them are not working. Health workers fear the increase in cases will overwhelm clinics.
Our camp, we've got about 4 beds in one room and the other 4 beds in the other room. And most of the times they're getting full when it is dry season, when the cholera season has not started. So we should expect more cases, and we might not have enough space for everyone when the rainy season starts.
Malawi started vaccinating against cholera in May with support from the World Health Organization. But community health workers say the uptake has been slow because many people shun the vaccine. Tam Chinula is a senior health surveillance assistant at Ndilande Clinic in Blantyre. They often ask why we are bringing so many vaccines. She says they fear the vaccine might cause infertility. They say the vaccine is meant for children without knowing that anyone can receive the vaccine depending on the gravity of the outbreak at hand. Malawi this month received nearly 3 million doses of cholera vaccine with support from the WHO, the Global Vaccine Alliance, and the UNICEF Children's Fund, UNICEF. In the meantime, health workers are educating communities on the need to get the vaccine and how to sanitize water supplies to make them safe for drinking. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
As climate change has challenged food security, some African countries that have relied on grain imports, like Senegal, are looking to indigenous grains like fonio that thrive in drier soil. Senegal celebrates an annual day of fonio to urge a scaling production of the nutritious grain as the region faces the impacts of climate change. Anika Hammerschlag reports from Kédougou, Senegal.
Dancers move to the beat of the tam-tam drums to welcome Senegal's 13th annual Day of Fonio. Fonio is a grain native to West Africa that is packed with nutrients like protein and amino acids. About 200 people turned out for the event, which takes place each year in the country's far east region of Kédougou. The region, on the border with Guinea and Mali, has become known as Senegal's Fonio hub. Aissata Aya Njai is an advisor with Senegal's Economic, Social, and Environment Council. The goal of this day is to raise awareness about the benefits of fonio, she says, and to encourage Senegalese people to adopt it into their diets. Fonio is gluten-free, rich in iron, and grows easily without pesticides or chemical fertilizers. Most importantly, the grain is drought-resistant and thrives in poor soils. Njai says it is the grain of the future. Fonio isn't impacted by climate variations, she says. We're never scared of drought or floods. We can always count on fonio. Njai says they always have a good harvest. Food insecurity looms large in West Africa, where climate change is blamed for weather extremes that challenge food production. The need for tough local crops like fonio is at an all-time high. The COVID pandemic and Russia's war in Ukraine exposed the region's dependence on imports like rice and wheat. Hadi Kamara is the founder of Vacances Vertes, or Green Holidays, a feminist conservation group. She says now is the time to start thinking about how to stock up on reserves for Africa and particularly for Senegal. Because if we don't, says Kamara, in one or two decades, I assure you that famine will destroy all of Africa. Fonio production has been held back by the tiring shelling process, usually done by hand. Dehulling machines donated by the U.S. African Development Foundation have benefited Senegal's Kédougou region. Keba Bari is the manager at the GIE Koba Club, a fonio processing factory. He says with the machine they can process 150 kilograms per hour, whereas manually, says Bari, they can't even process 10 kilograms per hour. But other regions of Senegal aren't so lucky. Nationwide, Senegal produced about 5,000 tons of fonio in 2019, compared to more than 500,000 tons in neighboring Guinea. As they sit down to a meal at Senegal's Day of Fonio, fans of the grain hope leaders prioritize its production to benefit the country's health and food supply. Annika Hammerschlag for VOA News, Kédougou, Senegal.
Billionaire philanthropist and Microsoft founder Bill Gates, during a trip to Kenya, has pledged an additional $7 billion in development funds to Africa. The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation said the money would be spent over the next 4 years to support African countries to confront hunger, disease, gender inequality, and poverty. Juma Majanga reports from Nairobi, Kenya.
Bill Gates, co-chair of the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, told reporters his foundation will spend more than $7 billion over the next 4 years to support African countries and institutions working to develop innovative approaches to confront hunger, disease, and poverty. Gates spoke late Thursday in Nairobi on his first trip to Africa since the COVID-19 pandemic began. He said the new commitment is in addition to existing funding to multilateral organizations, including Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, and the Global Fund to Fight AIDS, Tuberculosis, and Malaria.
What we counted in the $7 billion is actually delivery programs, you know, buying vaccines for Africa, paying for R&D to have better seeds here in Africa. That covers health and agriculture. Nigeria, of course, is in that $7 billion. And Nigeria would be the largest of our sub-Saharan spending, you know, just because of population of greater than 250 million. You know, there's just a lot of children born, a lot of things to be done then.
The billionaire philanthropist said these resources have helped strengthen health systems and increase access to health care in African countries, contributing to dramatic reductions in the rate of child deaths from diseases such as diarrhea, pneumonia, malaria, and measles.
Constantly reducing maternal mortality, constantly reducing neonatal mortality, under five mortality. That's really the metric that drives our foundation. We're very proud we're part of the movement with many other partners that during this century, child mortality has been cut in half, from 10 million a year children dying a year to less than 5 million a year dying. Now, during the pandemic, that number has been flat, so we need to get back to that improvement curve.
This week, Gates spent time visiting primary health care centers, medical facilities, and agricultural research institutes to learn from Kenyan and regional partners about programs and approaches that are succeeding and about remaining obstacles. One area of success has been in reducing child deaths.
Kenya happens to match that global percentage, going from 8% under 5 death rate to now about a 4% under 5 death rate. And it's the pneumococcus vaccine, the diarrhea vaccine, it's the malaria bed nets, it's been nutrition. All of those things have come together to create really fantastic progress.
The latest commitment from the Gates Foundation comes as the world grapples with overlapping crises that are worsening hunger, malnutrition, and poverty for millions. Even before the war in Ukraine disrupted the global food system, African countries were facing severe climate shocks, including droughts, locusts, and flooding. Today, 278 million people across Africa suffer from chronic hunger, with more than 37 million people facing acute hunger in the Horn of Africa alone. COVID-19 has also caused significant setbacks in immunization and stalled decades of progress made in combating HIV/AIDS, malaria, and tuberculosis. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For more health news and medical breakthroughs, visit voaafrica.com. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Linor Mudu in Washington, with producer Mukhibel Yabaro. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at @CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA. every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice.